Nesechvich Subis, Daf Samach Vav, 9 lines in the bottom of Daf Samach Heim Beis, at the new Perek, at the new Mishnah. This Perek, Metzias Isha, is the 6th Perek of Nesechvich Subis, and Tais points out that in Rashi he was Gurus, Hamadir Acha Afalpi, that the 7th Perek of Subis called Hamadir would come after Afalpi, and the reason is, since the last Mishnah in Perek Afalpi on Daf Samach Dalam Beis discussed when a husband sets up his wife to be supported through a third party trustee, therefore we talk about the 7th Perek, which also talks about a mada ishtay shloshim yoim yamid panis, as Taisa says, shu kain sholosh, which is similar to a third party trustee. And the achas shana mada chayzel in yirishin. And after we discuss hamada, then we go back to parak mitzias isha, which goes back to the original discussion as to the various benefits that a husband gets from his wife. And Taisa continues and says, al bepirish rach uvi yishalmi uvteisefta uvrei sperm gasina mitzias isha acha afapi, that the parak mitzias isha, which is the 6th parak that we have in our Gemara, is after Afalpi as we have it. I did a solik, since we finished off in the last parak in Ma'aseh Menika, if she was nursing Peich Salam and Ma'aseh Yadel, then we lower the amount that she has to earn, and that's why we continue with our mission that talks about Metzias Isha and her Ma'aseh Yadayim. Then Taisus explains the Hemshech of the 6th and 7th parak, because at the end of the 6th parak on the Afsamach Tesam Beis, the Mishnah says Hamashlos Ma'is Labitoi, and therefore we talk about the 7th parak of Hamadi afterwards, that also talks about Yamid Parnes, the Havik in Sholish, Ayin and Taisus. And we begin the new parak and the new Mishnah, Metzias Isha, Ma'aseh Yadel, by law. A husband has a right to his wife's findings or her Ma'aseh Yadayim, her earnings. And we know that a husband retains his wife's Metzias because of Eva, as the Gemara taught us in Bar Metzia and Daf Yubayz on Bayez, but Ayin Taisis Diva Masal Metzias or Kadafa on Daf Samach Vavimanav. And Taisis says that just like Ma'aseh Yadayim is Tachas Mezoinis, Metzias Isha is also Tachas Mezoinis as well. And the Mishnah continues, Virushasa, if a woman receives Yerusha while she's married, then her husband will have the rights to the pears while she's living, meaning although that during her lifetime she retains all the rights to the principal, but her husband will have the rights to any earnings or interest from any Yerusha that she receives. And of course, if the husband dies first, then the wife will keep her Karen and now have her pears. And if she dies first, then the husband will be Yerush Har. And Lefi Zed, we should have explained that this is not necessarily only relevant to a case where she was Yerush someone, but even in a case where the woman receives a Matana or gets an asset from any other place, the din would be that she keeps the Karen and her husband receives the payers. And Rashi brings a second shot to the Gemara when it says Virushasa, it means that the husband is Yerush his wife, and even on the chasim that she receives during her lifetime, even though that she has the Karen during her lifetime, but if she dies, her husband is Yerush even those assets that she only received after they got married. And the Mishnah continues, Baisho Pagama Shalah, if someone is Mazik a woman, then any embarrassment that she has or any Nezik that she has, which of course refers to a situation where she loses a limb and becomes devalued, then the din is that she would receive any of those payments according to Tanakama. However, Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira argues in Tanakama and says that she doesn't receive those payments all for herself, but she shares that with her husband. And Bizman Shebesesa lo shnei chalakim v'loy echad, that if the wound and if the embarrassment happens in a private area and it's a non-exposed injury and it's concealed, then she would receive two chalakim, she would receive 2/3, and the husband would receive 1/3 of the payment. However, Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira continues, Bizman Shebegaloi lo shnei chalakim v'loy echad. However, if the injury was an exposed place and it was done in public and therefore people saw this, so in that case, 2/3 of the payment would belong to the husband and she would only receive 1/3 of the payment. And Rashi says it was Masha Begolui, Shabbos Shaloi, that he receives the embarrassment, Ba'oich and Messes love, that she becomes disgusting to him because he has this exposed wound, Behu's Seivel, and he still has to be Seivel that, and therefore he gets 2/3 of the payment. And the Mishnah continues, according to Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira, Shaloi Yinasa Miyad, any payment that he receives, he gets right away and he can use it for whatever he wants. Bishalah, however, on her portion, you have to buy kaka in order to preserve the Karen, and then the husband will receive all the payers, the earnings and the interest that the kaka earns during her lifetime. And of course, if he divorces her or if he dies first, then she would receive the Karen. However, if she dies first, then he would receive the Yerusha and he would keep the Karen as well. And the last heist is on the bottom of the states, that's talking about a concealed spot that no one could see the wound, that someone wounded her face, for example, and the wound is visible to all, and he also has a begam. And Taisa then explains that we're not talking about if it was a revealed or concealed wound, and as Taisa says, that she was embarrassed between her and her assailant, and is referring to a case where someone was and it was in public. We begin the Gemara, and the Gemara asks, "My kamashbal and tanina l'chayu? What's the chiddush of a Mishnah? We already learned this in the Mishnah daf manvavim beis, and since we just learned this Mishnah, we're not going to explain it in detail, but we're going to get to the point. Ha'av zakeh v'bita b'kedusha b'kesef shtar ubiya, that a father has rights to his daughter to marry her off with kesef shtar ubiya. Zakeh b'mitziyasu v'maisi dea. He also has a right to her mitzias or her maisi daim. Uva first of the rare, and he could be made fun of dar mekabel skita. He could accept her get if she was only in arusa. Ve'ini elcha peiros b'chaya. And if his daughter receives Yerusha from somewhere else, he doesn't even have a right to her peiros, even though, of course, if she would die, he would be Yerusha. And then the Mishnah stated, Nisei siyesel of a baal, shu eichel peiros b'chaya, that once she gets married, then her husband has an additional benefit that if his wife received Yerusha while they were married, that he would be eichel peiros b'chaya, and he would not have to wait until she dies and until the point that he's Yerusha. And the Gemara's question is that l'chayr is no chiddush on Mishnah, because in the Mishnah, daf mem vav and beis, it's clear that a husband has all the benefits that a father would have and additional ones. This included that he has the right to mitzias, to ma'aseh deah, as well as to be Yerusha. And the Gemara answers, Eina chinami, our Mishnah is coming to teach us a chiddush, but he gave one din. Boishu begam istrichalei, plucked Rabbi Huda ben Bezeir, Rabbanon. The chiddush of our Mishnah is, but he gave boishu begam, that is a machlek between Rabbi Huda ben Bezeir and Rabbanon. And let's see the last three lines of Taisa Diba Maskel, Hacha Gassina, boishu begam ishallah. And Taisa is bothered that why does our Gemara say, boishu begam istrichalei, plucked Rabbi Huda ben Bezeir, Rabbanon? And it's mashma enough, not for the fact that there's a machlek between Rabbi Huda ben Bezeir, Rabbanon, then this would not be a proper teretz. And Taisa explains, if the Mishnah would only bring their dinner to Rabbanon, that boishu begam ishallah, that she keeps any boishu begam, then la istrich l'mistik klal mitziyasa ma'isidah, then we wouldn't have to add into the Mishnah the dinner mitziyas and ma'isidah, the ma'inin zeh itzel zeh, as what would be the connection between boishu begam and mitziyas and ma'isidah, the high havi shaloi, the high havi shaloi, because mitziyas and ma'isidah belong to the husband, and the dinner boishu begam is that belongs to her, for la istrich l'mistik, and the only reason why we now bring in mitziyas ishu ma'isidah, that it goes l'bayla, is because Rabbi Huda ben Bezeir says that the husband has some rights to her boishu begam, therefore it makes sense that agav the din of boishu begam, we also bring again the din of mitzias ishu ma'isidah, even though we already learned that on that mem vav beis. And the Gemara continues, Tani Tana kamei de Rava, and our Meir learned the following brisa in front of Rava, mitzias ishu la'atzma, a woman retains any mitzias that she finds, and this is not like a Mishnah. Rabbi Kiva imel l'bayla, Rabbi Kiva says like a Mishnah that mitzias ishu go to her husband, and amalei. So Rava says to the Samira, hashta umaha dafa de ma'isidah, that just like the excess earnings of a woman, which in reality is ma'isidayim, and it's really earnings of the woman, still amar b'kivah la'atzma, then even though her regular earnings are retained by the husband, and it's possible to think that the hadafa should belong to her husband as well, as Rashi says, b'shayach l'meima, shehei shaloi de ma'isidah tachas b'zoynes, and therefore all her ma'isidayim, including the hadafa, should belong to the husband, and even so, Rabbi Kiva hold that any hadafa belongs to her, so mitzias le'koshkin, then certainly mitzias, which have nothing to do with a ma'isi adayim, then certainly Rabbi Kiva should say that it belongs to her and does not belong to the husband. So l'chayr, how can we say that Rabbi Kiva agrees to our Mishnah that the mitzias belong to the husband? And the Gemara continues that how do we know that the hadafa belongs to the woman and not to the husband? The Tanabis, we learned to the Mishnah, and we saw this on Dafnun Testament Al, koinim shani oisel picha, if a woman says that I'm making a neder that my ma'isi adayim should be like a carbon to my husband and should be us to him, ain't it tzarech lafa, the husband doesn't have to be made for this neder because ain't adam oisel dav shein and shloi, and since the husband has all rights to a ma'isi adayim according to the Tanakhama, therefore you don't have to be made for this. However, Rabbi Kiva says that this neder would be chal, and therefore if you want to make sure that you don't have a problem, you should be made for this neder, shema tadef alav yaisim in arayloi, because maybe she'll have adafa, and adafa belongs to her, and therefore her neder will be chal on any adafa. And clearly we see from this Mishnah that any ma'isi adayim, including any ma'isa and any hadafa, belong to the husband according to Tanakhama, and Rabbi Kiva holds that although the ma'isi adayim belong to her husband, however the hadafa belongs to her. And because of this, the Gemara is bothered that if we see that according to Rabbi Kiva, the hadafa of her ma'isi adayim belong to her and does not go to her husband, then certainly her mitzias should not belong to her husband and should belong to her. And how could it be that we said in the brisa before that lefir Rabbi Kiva, anything a woman finds belongs to her husband? And because of this question, the Gemara now changes the brisa, and it says, Ela Epoch, let's switch around the brisa. Mitzias Ishla Baila, the Tanakhama actually says that the mitzias of a woman goes to her husband like our Mishnah, and Rabbi Kiva argues on a Mishnah, and he says, La Asma, based on the Kavachimah, a woman actually retains her mitzias and does not have to give it to her husband. The Gemara continues and asks, Vaki Asu Rabin, when Rabin came from Israel, Amra Bechon, he said in the name of Rabbi Echon, Badafa Shleya Deitcha, Kuli Amalei Pligi, Debal Avi, that even Rabbi Kiva agrees that if there would be a case where someone has excess earnings that a woman was able to earn very easily, and it was through normal business hours and practices, then those earnings certainly goes to her husband, even if you're Rabbi Akiva. And keep pligi, where's the machlekes between the Tanakam and Rabbi Akiva, ba'adof shal yidei atchak, where a woman exerted herself and therefore earned excess money. And the Tanakam is sovel abayla, the Tanakam holds those excess earnings are retained by the husband. However, Rabbi Akiva sovel asma, Rabbi Akiva holds that any earnings that a woman earns al yidei atchak, she retains and does not have to give it to the husband. And Rashi explains that the Gemara at this point feels that the mitzias are considered like hadof shal yidei atchak, because she didn't have to exert herself in order to take this mitziah, and therefore, how can we say this machlekes between the Tanakam and Rabbi Akiva b'negei mitzias? L'chayra, all should agree that mitzias goes to our husband and should not be retained by herself, and therefore, how can we say that Rabbi Akiva said it goes la'atzma, that she retains her mitzias? The Gemara explains, or a papa says mitzias a kadofa shal yidei etchak tami, that mitzias are actually not considered like hadofa shal yidei etchak, but a mitzias considered hadofa shal yidei etchak, and therefore plucked at Rabbi Akiva Rabbanon. That's why there's a machlekes between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbanon, and Lefida Rabbanon, even though that mitzias are considered like hadafish al yidei atchak, still the husband would receive the mitzias. However, Rabbi Akiva holds, since it's considered like hadafish al yidei atchak, therefore she would retain the rights to a mitzias, just like she retains the rights to any hadaf al yidei atchak. And Rashi explains, why is it that mitzias are considered hadafish al yidei atchak? Do roiv mitzias tzarech lachs achreim? Because for roiv mitzias, a person has to actually do something in order to retrieve them. Kegoyim dogim shenishar b'yibasha, like fish that came up onto the dry land, that you have to go and collect them. Like tzvi shavu, if you have a tzvi that has a broken leg and you still have to capture it, or if a person digs for treasures and finds a jewel, then of course that came through a tchak. And the Gemara continues, Rapapa now asks a shayla, according to Rabbi Akiva, to hold that a woman retains any earnings that came al yidei tchak. So Gemara asks, let's say a woman takes two jobs and is being paid for two jobs simultaneously, would that be considered hadafa shal yidei tchak, and she would retain those earnings, or we would not consider it hadafa shal yidei tchak, and she would not retain those earnings? And by Rabina is shloishoy dal b'bas achas mau. Even if you say that two jobs simultaneously is not considered al yidei atchak, what about if he has three jobs or four jobs simultaneously? Would that be considered al yidei atchak or not? And the Gemara ends off with the teiku. And Rashi gives examples: shemeres kishurim, if she would be guarding cucumbers, betava pishtin, or spinning flax, umelamed shil noshim b'scha, or she's teaching women to sing, umechamemus beya b'cheka, or she's incubating eggs in her lap, or if she would be incubating silkworms in her lap in order to create silk. And Rashi explains hadafa shloi al yidei tchak kagon shehi iranis ubalas malacha, that's referring to a woman who does her work very quickly and she's someone that has a talent, and therefore even though during the same amount of time that another woman may take in order to spin wool of five slayim, she is able to do something of much higher value, that's considered hadafa shloi al yidei tchak, and kuli amalei pligi debal havi, and therefore everyone agreed that the husband will retain any of those earnings. And the shita brings down from the Rabbeinu Chanan al ki pligi ba hadafa shal yidei tchak. And a woman went and did something and she pushed herself and she worked at night, and therefore she earned excess earnings, that's considered hadafa shal yidei atchak. And he says that the reason according to Tanakama that goes to her husband, because the zimna did nafla b'chayli, because maybe she'll get sick by working extra hours and by pushing herself, and then she'll need to be healed, and therefore her husband retains any earnings that she earned al yidei atchak, because ultimately he may have to pay money for her refuah. And the Gemara continues and quotes from Mishnah, Baishu Pagama, the Tanakama said that it belongs to her, while Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira said that part of it belongs to her husband. And the Gemara asks, if Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira holds that a husband receives money for the busha that recurred to his wife, so then L'chayra, Maskel Rabbi Barav Chanan, El Me'ata, Baishu Sashi Shechaveri, if someone is Mevayish, his friend's horse, Hachinami, the Bayil Meitlein Baishis, then L'chayra, he should have to pay the owner of the horse for the busha. And Taisis immediately asks, Tema, my parch, what type of question is this? In our Mishnah, the Mishnah never said that you pay the woman for a full busha and then you pay for the man busha as well. From the chelik of the busha of the woman, you give a part of that to the husband. And if so, if we would have a case where a woman doesn't receive busha, then certainly if you're not going to give to the woman, then the husband would not get for his own busha. And therefore, how can you ask a question from someone that's mevayish a horse if a horse doesn't really receive any busha? And in any case, the Gemara continues and answers, v'suspa b'shu, how can you ask a question from a horse? Of course, the owner of a horse doesn't get embarrassed just because someone hurt his horse. And the Gemara continues that how could Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira have said that if someone's mevayish someone's wife, then he receives the value of habusha al rakak bebigdash shel chaver. Hachidami de bayil meitin lebayishes. Would you say that if someone spits at his friend's beged when the friend is not wearing the beged, then the doom would be that you have to pay bayishes to the friend? Of course, he's not wearing it at this point, and therefore he didn't have actual busha. So lechayu, why would we say over here that if his wife got embarrassed, that he would receive any payment for embarrassment? And lechayu, the Gemara's point is that the Mishnah only discussed the case of bayishes of begam that the Tanakhama held that belongs completely to her, and Rabbi Yehuda ben Maaseiah said that her husband would receive a portion of her embarrassment and her begam. However, the Mishnah never spoke about Shevis, Ripui, and Sar, and the reason is because Shevis and Ripui for sure belongs to her husband because he would pay for her refuah and also for any loss of work, and the Mishnah also didn't have a shayla that any Sar that she has and any pain that she received, that certainly the husband would not share in that because he didn't have any pain, and therefore that's really the Gemara's question, that why would we say that the din of Baishas and Pagam would be different than Sar, and of course it should belong to her, and the husband would not receive any chelik in her Baishas and Pagam. And even though we learned the point in the Gemara that's talking that he was not wearing the shirt when someone spit on it, because if he was wearing the shirt, that becomes part of him, and certainly there would be a chiv to pay for the busha. However, other Rishonim learned that the Gemara's point is even if he was wearing the shirt, and the Gemara says, v'chitem hachinami, and maybe you're going to tell me that if someone spits on someone's shirt, that you would pay for his busha. But tam, we learned in the Mishnah, rakuk v'giv bayareik, if someone spits at someone and the spit reaches him, upar reishisha, or if Reuven goes and uncovers the hair of a woman, v'heve talisa mimena, or if he takes away his clothing from him, chayv litnoi abba meizuz, then he has to pay 400 zuz for his busha. Rav Papa says, leishano albay, that the only time we said that if you spit, you have to pay for the busha is only if you spit at him. Avo bebigdai pata, but if you spit at his beged and he's not wearing the beged, or like the other Rishonim, even if he's wearing the beged, you'd be pata. So if we see that someone is pata, if someone spits on the beged, then lechayu, why should they be chayiv to pay the husband if someone embarrasses his wife? And the Gemara answers, bebigdai les leizelusa, that if someone spits on your beged, the person doesn't have any embarrassment. But ishtai is leizelusa, but if you spit at his wife, then even the husband would be embarrassed, and therefore you have to pay the may bishes to the husband as well. And lefi the way we learned, we were gurus ishtai is lazy lusa, and not the way we see in our Gemara of ishtai is lazy lusa. And the Gemara continues in is amle Ravina Ravashi. So Ravina says to Ravashi, elame ata, if it's true that a husband is paid for embarrassment because he is also embarrassed when his wife is embarrassed, so lechayu bayish ani ben taivim, if someone embarrasses a person that comes from a wealthy family that they have a certain covet and a certain respect to uphold, the islus is kul b'nei mishpacha, and there's embarrassment to the entire mishpacha when you embarrass that ani. Hachinami debayil meitinu bayishul chol b'nei mishpacha. Do you think that you have to pay for the embarrassment of the entire mishpacha? Or malay hasim lava gufayu, over there we don't consider the entire family to be part of the same body. But hacha ishtay gufay havei, we have a cloud that ishtay gufay, and that has halachic ramifications, because although when you hit an ani ben taivim and you embarrass him, although maybe the people in the family are embarrassed, but lemaisa there was no wound and nothing happened to them physically, and therefore we can't go and pay the rest of the family. However, when someone embarrasses a woman, that's considered as if you mamish did something physically to the husband, and therefore the husband has a right to the busha as well. So basically, in order to collect busha, you need two things. First of all, at least on a halachic basis, we have to look at it as if you were hurt yourself and something physical happened to you. And number two, it has to be that you actually were embarrassed, and if you weren't lemaisa embarrassed, then you would not receive bishas either. And Taisus in Divrei Maskil Ani ben Taivim points out shalem l'shemim min hamakim ha'isai, that the family of an Ani ben Taivim are embarrassed because they have a responsibility to protect him. Aval Asher ben Taivim she'ein aleim lishma isai, but when there's a wealthy person that comes from a wealthy family, so the people in the family are not responsible for him, then the rest of the mishpacha would not be embarrassed, and that's why our Gemara specifically talks about Ani ben Taivim and not by someone that's an actual usher. And we continue with the Mishnah, paisik meis l'chasnai mes chasnai, if someone promised a certain amount of money for a dowry for his son-in-law, and then the son-in-law died before they had children, he could say, I wanted to give this dowry to your brother, however, I don't want to give this to you necessarily. And we see in the Gemara, it doesn't make a difference if the brother was more chashiv than the original husband or not. And in order to understand the next part of the Mishnah, let's start with a quick hakdama. If a woman brings an atunya of money into her marriage, which can immediately be used by her husband for investment purposes, and he can invest it for the entire duration of their marriage, so the husband agrees that if he divorces her or if he dies before her, then he will be responsible to pay her 50% more than the amount she brought into their marriage, or Rashi refers to as shlish yaisa, based on Shlish Milavar. So, for example, if she brought in $1,000 of cash into their marriage, he will take responsibility to return to her $1,500 at the termination of their marriage. And the Rishonim are bothered that L'chayra, how could we say that he would have to pay her $1,500 because he has use of the money? But L'chayra, that would be a problem of Ribbis. And they explain that since he has this responsibility to pay her the $1,500, even if he dies immediately or he divorces her immediately, therefore, this is not a problem of Ribbis. However, if she brings clothes or kalim into their marriage, which she will use during their marriage, so not only will her husband not gain from these assets, but these assets will also depreciate in value based on their uses during the marriage. And even if she brings in prakmatio or merchandise to sell, which will not depreciate, but since they're not cash, so therefore they're not available for her husband to immediately use for investment purposes. And when they appraise the value of such assets at the wedding hall, the appraisers would always exaggerate and inflate their actual value by 25%. And therefore, her husband would write that he is responsible to return to her 20% less than their appraised values. So for example, she brought in $1,000 worth of appraised assets, he would only write that he's responsible to return $800 worth of assets. And Rashi also explains that the only time that they would exaggerate the value of these assets and they would appraise them for a higher value was only if they made that appraisal at the chasen hall, and they did this l'chvoid hakala and l'chav v'albayla. However, if they appraised these assets at a regular appraisal and it was an outside appraisal that wasn't done in conjunction with the chasen hall, then we would write the exact amount of the appraisal into the ksuba, and it seems that we would not take into account any depreciation at all. But Ayin Taisis and the Taisis Rid, as well as Rabbi Nechanano, who learned the Mishnah a bit differently. And let's see this in the Mishnah. Paskal hachas loy elef dinah, if she promised to bring into the marriage 1,000 dinah, who paisa kenegdon chamesh esri mona, then as discussed, since he has use of this money from the beginning of the marriage until when the marriage is over, then he has to give her $1,500, and he gives her a 50% profit margin. Uchenegda shum, however, if they had items that they appraised, then since these assets depreciate and the appraisers will always inflate these real value based on kveda kala and l'chava abayla, therefore who paisik pachas chaimish, then the husband will deduct 20% from the valuation of the appraiser. And for example, as we said, if the valuation came in at $1,000, he would write in the ksuba that he only received assets worth $800. And the third din in the Mishnah is shumba mana v'shava mana in le'ala mana, that if they had a real appraisal done and it wasn't done at the wedding hall, so if the appraisal came in at $100, then we say that the value is really $100, and therefore you wouldn't deduct 20% from the valuation, and you'd write in the ksuba that he received $100. And the Mishnah continues, shumba mana hine sena shleishim ve'echad sela v'dina, that if prior to the woman actually bringing the items that she was going to bring in as an adunya, she promises that she's going to bring $100 worth of value into the marriage, and therefore he wrote into the ksuba that he will return 100 mana or 100 dina, because that's a responsibility that he took on himself. Then the din is that she's going to bring in any assets into the marriage, and she's going to have them appraised by the chasna. So since we know that the appraiser will always inflate their real value, l'chveid hakala and l'chava abayla, and they'll increase it by an additional 20%, so she will have to give him assets that were evaluated by the appraiser of 31 sela and a dina. And since there are 4 dina and a sela, therefore 31 sela equal 124 dina, and plus 1 dina equals 125. And of course, if you deduct 25% of 125 dina, that would equal to 100 dina that he promised to pay back if he divorces her or if he dies before her. And similarly, v'abba meis, if they wrote into the ksuba that she promised to give him assets of 400 zuz, that he said is chamesh meis, then she would actually have to bring into the marriage assets worth 500 dina based on a person that appraised it at the chasen hall, because he was doing a l'chav v'albayla, and therefore he inflated their real value. And if the appraiser appraised it at 500 dina, then of course if you take 20% off of 500, you will get to the actual value, which is 400 dina, and that's the amount that the husband is responsible to pay her back. And the Mishnah continues, Masha chasen paisik hu paisik paichas chaimish, and if the woman brings in assets into the marriage and she already predefined the actual value of those assets by having them appraised by the chasen hall, so when the chasen takes responsibility to pay back those assets, he writes in the ksuba the amount that they were appraised for, and he deducts 20% based on the fact, as we said before, that the appraiser will inflate their real value by 25%. And of course, once again, when the Mishnah discusses the concept of a chaimish, it's always dealing with milabar and not milagav. And Rashi points out that although our Mishnah mentioned many cases, and it seems that it was just giving the exact same cases over and over in different ways, Zok Rashi, that the Gemara will explain why the Mishnah went to such great detail. And the Gemara begins that we said in the Mishnah, if a man promises to pay a dowry to his son-in-law of a certain amount of money, and then that son-in-law dies and he didn't have children, and now his daughter fell yibum, so the Chacham say that the father could back out and could say that although I wanted to give your brother this amount of a dowry, however, to you. I never decided, I never agreed to give a dowry, and therefore he has a right to back out. And the Gemara explains, Tanur Rabbanan, we learned, Ein Tzarich Lamid Rishon Talmid Chacham V'Sheni Am Ha'aretz. Of course, in the case where the first husband was a Talmid Chacham and the Yavam is an Am Ha'aretz, then certainly he could back out. El Afil Rishon Am Ha'aretz, even if the first husband was an Am Ha'aretz, and V'Sheni Talmid Chacham and the Yavam is Talmid Chacham, Yachal Lamid, the father could still say, L'chicha Yitzi Reitzi Litein, that for your brother, I wanted to give this money and I wanted to give this to the dunya based on his midas or his personality, but to you, I don't want to give this money and I could back out from the dunya. And the Gemara continues, Paskal Achlis Loy Elav Dina, and the Mishnah then continued and said, and then the Mishnah gave three examples, Shum B'mono, Hinei Senes Shleishim Echad Selav Dina, and then it said, Abba Meis, Hinei Senes Chomish Meis, and then we said, Mashach Chasim Paisik, Hu Paisik Pachis Chomish. So why do we need all these cases? So the Gemara says, Hainu Reisha, L'chaira, all these are the same case. The Gemara answers, Tana Shum Rabba, V'tani Shum Azuta, Tana Shum Adidei, V'tani Shum Adida. And as Rashi explains, the first case that we said, Cheneged Hashem, Hu Paisik Pachis Chomish, that's going back to a case when the dunya was 1,000 dinar. So that's something where it was a great amount of money. And one may think that the appraisals were not appraised for a larger value because it's already a large amount of money. Kamash one, even over there, they appraise it for an inflated price. And the next case in the Mishnah where we said, Shumba Mana, Hine Senesle, Shleshavech of the Sel of Adina, that's talking about a small amount of money. And the appraisals also inflate their value even when it's a small amount of money. And in the last case in the Mishnah we said, Mashachasim Paisik, Hu Paisik, Bachas Chomish, that's teaching us a Chiddush that even when the husband goes and appraises the value of these assets, they also add on and they increase the value by 25%. And therefore, when they write the value in the Ksuba, they would deduct 20% from the value that the appraisers valued it at. And that is the case that the Gemara refers to as Shumer Didei. And then the Gemara says that we also discuss a case of Shumer Dida, which is the case where the Mishnah said of Abba Meir's, in a case where the husband already wrote in the Ksuba that he is responsible for an Adunya of 400 dinar, so then she would have to bring in the Nechasim that are valued at 500 dinar. Since the appraisal is being done by her appraisers and her family, they will definitely inflate their real value by 25%. And the Mishnah continues that even though we said in the prior Mishnah, Paskal Hachlis Loy Elav Dina, who placed connected on Chomesh Esri Mana, that when she's bringing in $1,000 of cash, we write in the Ksuba that he owes and is responsible to pay her back $1,500. And even so, our Mishnah brings a similar case, Paskal Hachlis Loy Ksafim, Sloyim Nasa Shisha Dinran, that if the woman promised to bring in Sloyim, which is 4 dinar, then when the husband writes that in the Ksuba, he adds on 50% and he writes in that I have responsibility to pay her back 6 dinrin. And the Mishnah continues, Achasim Mekabel of Asar Dinrin Lekupa Lechol Mana Umana, that every Chasim is Mekabel on himself, that for every 100 dinar that she brings in as her Nadinya, he has to give her an allowance of 4 dinar so she can buy perfume, and this is based on her social status. And the Mishnah ends off, Rav Shimon Gamliel Oymeh, Akol Kamin Gamadina, that all of the dinim that we said in the last two Mishnayos, which are relevant to evaluations and appraisals, as well as to the amount of money that he has to give her as allowance for her makeup and cosmetics, that is going to be based on Min Gamadina, and it's not necessarily going to be based on the dollars that we mentioned in the Mishnah. And we begin the Gemara that why did the Mishnah have to say now, Paskal Hachas like Safim Sloyim Nasa Shisha Dinran, if we already said in the last Mishnah that you have a din when you bring in $1,000, they have to write in the Ksuba $1,500, as the Gemara says, Hainu Paisa Kenegdom Chamisha Asamana. On that, Gemara answers, Tana Isker Abba V'Tana Isker Zuta, that the Mishnah wanted to discuss a case where she brought in a lot of cash, and when someone has a lot of capital, it's easier to sometimes make more money, but there's also more risk. And we also discuss a case where there's less risk and less money involved, and therefore less profitability. And no matter what, in all cases we say that her husband takes the responsibility for 50% more than she brought into the marriage, or what the Gemara says is considered a third milabar. And the Gemara explains, Vitzricha, and we have to bring in both cases of Isker Abba and Isker Zuta, when you have a lot of capital and a small amount of capital, because the Itana Isker Abba, if we only talk about a case where you had a lot of capital, the Nafish Revacha, so over there, it's easier to make a larger profit, and like we say, the rich get richer, and maybe that's why he takes on responsibility for 50% more. Al Isker Zuta, the Zuta Revacha, Emoloi, maybe in a case where it was only a small amount of capital, so maybe there was less amount of money and less amount of profits that he could make, and maybe since he would have less opportunities to make more money, so maybe he would not have to write in the Ksuba that he takes on the responsibility of 50% more than she brought into the marriage. And that's why our Mishnah brought a case of Iska Zuta, where she only brought in a Sela into the marriage, and still he takes on the responsibility to give her back Sislina, Viashmin Iska Zuta. And we'd only say the case of Mishnah where there was Iska Zuta, the Zuta Ziyuna, since there's only a small amount of money, and therefore it is only a small amount of expenses and a small amount of risk, so maybe over there we say that he takes on the responsibility of 50%. Aval Iska Rabba, the Nuf nafesh yuna emaloi. So therefore, tzricha. But in the case where there was a lot of money to invest, which would increase his yitzias and his achrayus on that money, so maybe over there he would not be responsible to pay her back 50% more than she brought into the marriage. So kamash malon, the first mishnah told us that paskal hachas loy elof dina who paiska connect on chamesh esrimana, that even in that case he adds on 50% to what she brought into the marriage. And the Gemara continues and quotes from Mishnah Hachasim Mekabel Lov Asar Adin and Lekupa Lechol Mano Mano, that the Chasim takes on the responsibility to give her an allowance of 10 dinar for every money that she brought in as her Nadunya into the household, because that shows that she's on a higher social status and she needs more perfume. And the Gemara asked, my Kupa, what are we referring to when we mention the Kupa? Rav Ashi explained, as we explained, Kupa Shabbosam, it's talking about a basket full of perfume. From Rav Ashi said, this din that you have to give her a basket full of perfume is only talking about women that get married in Yerushalayim. And as Rashi said, it was the normal custom of women that lived in Yerushalayim to wear a lot of perfume. And Taisa asked that Lemaisa, we learned to Gemara in Yuma, that how can you say in Yerushalayim they had to wear more perfume if Lemaisa, the opposite is true, that in Yerushalayim, because of the Recha Ketores, they wouldn't have to wear besom at all. And therefore, Taisa explains, that what Rav Ashi meant when he said Lekupa Shel Besamim, he's referring to other beauty supplies in order to smooth their skin and to remove their hair, but he's actually not discussing perfumes at all. And Achrenim explained Lefi Rashi that the reason why the women in Yerushalayim would wear Besamim was because in Echidami they wouldn't necessarily need to wear Besamim in Yerushalayim because of the Reich HaKtayis, but they didn't want to be Nena from the Reich HaKtayis of the Beis HaMikdash, and therefore they wore a lot of Besamim in order to counteract that smell, and they wouldn't have a problem of Me'ila. And the Gemara continues, by Rav Ashi asked the following question. We send in the Mishnah that he has to give a 10 dinarin for every mana that she brings in as her nedunya. So Rav Ashi asked, when we said that he has to give 10% of every single money that she brought in as a nedunya, b'mana nishim or b'mana meskabel, do we look at the $100 out of the value that was actually appraised, which, as we said before, is inflated by 25%, or is the husband responsible to give her a 10% allowance based on the amount that he accepted upon himself, which of course is 20% less than the evaluation that was done by the appraisers? And the Gemara continues, Intim Suleiman Mana Meskabel, if you're going to say that it's based on the Mana Meskabel, Yom Rishon or Kol Yom V'Yom, does he have to give her 10% the first day or every single day? Intim Suleiman Kol Yom V'Yom, if you're going to say he has to give her every single day, Shabbos V'Shon, is it only for the first week? Or Kol Shabbos V'Shabbos, or is it for every single week? Intim Suleiman Kol Shabbos V'Shabbos, if you're going to say it's for every single week, Chodesh V'Shon, is it only for the first month? Or Kol Chodesh V'Chodesh, or every single month of the first year? Intim Suleiman Kol Chodesh V'Chodesh, if you can tell me it's for every single month, Shana Rishayna, is it only applicable to Shana Rishayna because there's a special bond between the Chassid and Kala for all of these weeks, months, and the first year, or you call Shana Rishayna, or is it also for every single year of their lives? And the Gemara ends off with the Teiku. And Taisa points out, Intim Salimah B'mana Meskabel, and Taisa says, V'huadin Matzal Meima Intim Salimah B'mana Nishim, that the last series of questions that the Gemara just brought down is not necessarily relevant if we actually paskin that we give 10% of Mana Meskabel, or if we give 10% of Mana Nishim, the Shaila would be the same. And in the next Taisa points out that of course the Gemara couldn't be asking a Shaila if the husband has to give a 10% allowance every single day, or he has to give it every single week, or every single year, as Kama B'mehira Yichlo Isa Mamin, of course, all the money will be dissipated very quickly. Elevadi Nira, the Esedina Yitin Lo L'chol Mamin L'skash L'Olam, that when we said you give her 10 dina for every 100 dina that she brings into the marriage, it just means that that will be the total amount that he would give her. And the question is, do we give it to her right away, or do we spread it out over weeks, months, and years? And as Taisa says, when we boil it, the shaila is, im yitin lo bebas achas, do you give it to her all at one time? And then she has to guard it in order to have enough perfume until she finishes all those makeups and different items that he gave her. And afterwards, he would have to give her the amount tachshitin she needs. Or you don't give it at one time. The husband is controlling these beauty products and only gives her the amount of supplies that she needs every single day. But once again, once she would run out of these beauty supplies, then the husband will continue having to give her beauty supplies lefi chvayda for the rest of her life. And the Gemara continues, Amar Rabbi Yehuda Merav, Maisav Bita Shal Nakdim Ben Gurion. There was a story with the daughter of Nakdim Ben Gurion, and we had a similar story on Daf Samachayim and Aleph regarding the daughter-in-law of Nakdim Ben Gurion. Rashi explained that her husband died, and she came to Bezin in order that they should decide how large of an allowance she would receive for Besamim for one day. And Amar Lahem, she said to them, Kach that this is the amount that you should give to your daughters. And as we explained before, on Daf Samachim and Aleph, either she was saying in a Lashon of Klala that you should also give such a small amount to your daughters, or she was saying in a Lashon of Bracha that you should be zeichah to give your daughters this amount. And they responded, Amen. Now, if you Rashi that her husband was dead, then why does the Gemara say that they responded, Amen, if the Gemara Daf Samachim and Aleph said that in a similar story with the daughter-in-law of Nachman Ben Gurion, the Chacham did not answer Amen because she was a Shemeris Yavam. So over here also, since her husband died, they shouldn't have responded Amen. However, Taisus differentiates and says the previous Gemara is a story where she was Shemeris Yavam and her husband died, Avokan Shayachai, but over here the husband was alive, Anu Achrei Amen, that's why the Rabbanan responded Amen, Ubaila Hitla Chacham Shiyifsikala. And even though if her husband was alive, why was she coming to the Chachamim to be Paisik for her and to decide how much should she get for something? So Taisus, that her husband went to the Chachamim to decide what the proper amount is for her allowance. And Taisus and Dibu Maskel Shapasal Dao Mezuhun, the Kup Shab Sam, he points out, and even though in a moment we'll learn that she actually had an adunya of a million dinri zav, Lafida Cheshbin of Tandina per mana, he should have received a much larger allowance than 400 zuhuvim for her Kup Shab Samim. And Taisus says, Kimishlai Satricha Yaisa Lai Paskala, that since Lamaisa she wouldn't need such a large allowance, therefore they didn't set up that amount for her. And if you keep these stories in historical perspective, Nachman Ben Gurion was, of course, at the end of Bayis Sheni, and Lafi Rashi, his daughter, as well as his daughter-in-law, were both almanas because of the major destruction and the amount of people that were killed during the Churban Bayis Sheni. And the Gemara continues, that it was a story with Rabbi Yechim and Zakkai, again, at the end of Bayis Sheni, that he was riding on a donkey, and he was going out of Yishlaim, and his Talmidim were walking after him. And he saw a young girl that she was collecting barley from between the dung of an animal of an Arab. Once she saw Rabbi Yechim and Zakkai, she covered herself with her hair and she stood in front of him. And Amrullah Rebbe Panasoni, and she said back to Rabbi Yechim and Zakkai, Rebbe, support me and give me food. Amrullah bast me at, and he said back to her, whose daughter are you? Amrullah, and she said, bast Nachdim Ben Gurion, I am the daughter of Nachdim Ben Gurion. Amrullah, she said to her, Biti, Mam Shal Besavi, Chechen Halach, where's all the money that your father used to have? Amrullah, she said, Rebbe, Loikidim Masal Masal Bishlaim, is it not proper that they say the following Masal Bishlaim, Melch Mam Chasav, Amrullah Chasad, that the salt or the preservative for money is to give it away? And as Rashi says, Yechsrenel Tzedakah Tamid, Vechasrenel Zeo Kiyuma, by giving it away to Tzedakah, that will be the kiyum of your money. Or some say, by doing Chesed with it, as Rashi says, Yasim Mani Chesed, Vishal Beis Abba, Asa Tzedakah Karoyim, Vichalim Mainan, and since my father did not do Tzedakah properly, therefore he lost his money. He then asked, Vishal Beis Chamei Chechen Hu, where is the money of your father-in-law? He was also wealthy. Armalashi said, Bazev Ibn Azer, they were invested together, my father and my father-in-law, and therefore they both lost the money together. They weren't diversified properly. And once again, if you think about this in the historical context, she wasn't blaming anyone for the loss of their money. She actually blamed themselves for doing averus and not actually using their money properly, instead of blaming that people actually destroyed all their money as they burnt down all of her father's warehouses. And Amrullah, and she continued and said to Rabbi Yechon, Rabbi, Zecharata Kishchamta Ksubasi, do you remember when you signed on my Ksuba? Amrullahen, Lutamidim, and he said to his Talmidim, Zecharani Kishchamta Ksubasa Shalzu, I remember when I signed on her Ksuba, Vayisi Kariba, and I read it in the Ksuba, Elif Alafim Dinri Zav, and Beis Aviyah Chut Mishal Chamea, that she would get 1,000 Dinri Zav, which means 1,000,000 Dinri Zav, from her father's house, aside from what her chasen brought in as his Taisis Ksuba. And Bach Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai Va'omah, so Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai started crying, and he said, Ashrechim Yisrael, Bizman Shaisim Shalmachim, in Kal Umu Vlashi Shalatis Bem, how fortunate is Klai Yisrael that they have Ashkacha Pratis, and when they do the Ratzin Makadish Baruch Hu, then no Umu and no Lashin could be Shalal in them, who Bizman Shaisim Shalmachim, however, when they don't do the proper things, Moisim Biad Umu Shvela, Makadish Baruch Hu placed them in the hands of a nation that's a lowly nation, and Veloi Biad Umu Shvela, El Biad Behemtin Shal Umu Shvela, and not only in a lowly nation, but even in the hands of the Behemah of an Umu Shvela, because over here she was gathering Sayyim, Mi Bain Gloli Behemtin Shal Abayim, from the animals of the Arabs. And Rashi says, Abayim Kari Umu Shvela, they're called the lowly nation, Shesheikhli Oilim Heim Bimidba, because they live and they dwell in tents in the Midba, and they're nomads. And the Gemara continues, Venakdimim Ben Gurion, like Ovid Tzedakah, is it possible that you could say that Nachdimim Ben Gurion didn't do Tzedakah, Vatani Bilitra Braisa, Omra Lov al Nachdimim Ben Gurion, that they said about Nachdimim Ben Gurion, Shay Yaisim Basil and Basil Medrish, when he would walk from his house to the Basil Medrish, they would roll out the red carpet for him and they would spread out material of fine wool under his feet in order that he could be able to walk in it and be comfortable. And we continue on Samach Zayin and Adal for Boyan Anim, Kapla Yisrael Ma'achrav, and then Nanim would come and take those material of fine wool and he allowed them to keep it in order that they should have Panasa. So we see he gave a lot of tzedakah. On that Gemara says, Iba Yisema L'chvaydu David. Either you could say that the reason why he was giving tzedakah was for his own glory, V'Iba Yisema K'dboi L'mevet L'yavad, that in Chedami he gave a lot of tzedakah, but based on his wealth, he should have given a lot more tzedakah. K'dam Inchi, as people say, L'fum Gamlo Shichta, according to the size and the strength of the camel, is the size and the weight of the packages that we throw onto the Gamel. And since Nachman Ben Gurion was so wealthy, really he had a lot more responsibility and he should have bore a larger load of the burden. And the Gemara continues, Tani we learned to Bryce Armor Blazer Tzadik. Blazer Tzadik says, A Rabbi Nachman, why we see a choice of Laketasarium being Talfi Susan Ba'akai. And some explain that Rabbi Nachman in Lashon Sagi Nardi was saying that I should never have consolement. And some say, if the following is not true, then my children should die and then people would have to be Menachemi. But in any case, Rabbi Blazer Tzadik said, that I saw the daughter of Nachman Ben Gurion that she was collecting barley from in between the horse's hooves in Akko. And Karas Yalem Mikruzer, I said this pasuk in Shir Hashirim about her, and when I say the lach hayaf benashim, tzi lach b'ikve atayin, u'i is gedir seyach. So the pasuk teaches it's talking about Klal Yisrael that are not learning Torah, and if you forget Torah, then the end result will be that people will not do work for you, but you'll have to do your own work, and you'll have to go and graze your own sign. And Rabbi Elazar Reb Tzadik applied this pasuk to the daughter of Nachman Ben Gurion, and he explained, al tikri gedir seyach, elo gviyoy seyach. And he explained the pasuk that if a woman doesn't have food and doesn't know where to get food, then she should go to the ankles of the sheep, or as the story was, that she went to the horse's hooves, and from there she will be able to get sustenance for her body, and we will stop over here.